Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The creature we worship is man himself. We worship ourselves. We worship humanity. We worship our own intellect. We worship our own ideas. This is the idolatry of the West, man worshiping himself, deifying himself, worshiping other men, putting men's ideas and theories and philosophies above God.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian is continuing his study in the book of Romans. Join us as Pastor Brian begins in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, in a message titled, God Gave Them Up. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
We are carrying on in our study in Paul's epistle to the Romans. So, once again, we find ourselves in the first chapter. Let me read to you from verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and divine nature, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. The verses before us seem to be a clear description of the world as we know it. And yet, it is actually a description of the world in Paul's day. But it isn't only a description of the world in Paul's day. It is a description of what has happened and what will happen to every civilization, nation, people, tribe, or person who rejects the knowledge of the true God. So we have to understand, Paul says a lot in these verses here, And of course, we could zero in on, you know, some of the different things that he's addressing. But I think it's important that we look at these verses from the perspective that Paul intended, and not to get off into the finer details of it. And Paul's intention here is to show why the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven. That, remember, that's his purpose. Remember, his even bigger purpose, as we've talked about, is to show why men need the gospel, why there's not a single possibility that anybody's going to survive the judgment of God. Therefore, everyone needs the gospel. Everyone needs that grace that God's gospel supplies. So again, here he's building this case, and he is giving a description of, like I said, his generation, but he's also describing what has happened in cycles all throughout history. This cycle has been repeated over and over again historically, and we happen to be at the end, it seems, of another one of these cycles of sin. This is the reason why the passage seems so familiar to us. It's because we can look around us and see very similar kinds of things. Now, some people have said, well, you know, Paul, he kind of exaggerated. He overstated the case. You know, you can't really trust that his description was accurate. Surely, things weren't as bad as he made them out to be. William Barclay, in his commentary on Romans, he addressed that. And he said, this picture might seem the work of some almost hysterical moralist who was exaggerating the contemporary situation and painting it in colors of rhetorical hyperbole. It describes a situation of degeneracy of morals almost without parallel in human history. But Paul said nothing that the Greek and Roman writers of the age did not themselves say. So as a matter of fact, when you look at what the Greek and the Roman writers said, Paul seems to have almost understated the case in comparison to what some of them said about the culture that they were living in. And of course, one of the reasons it seems that Paul might have understated it is because Paul doesn't go into the graphic kind of detail that they would have done as writers. But going on, as Barclay often will do, he gives a lot of great, he's the master at looking at the background and the cultural situation and the historical situation. He goes on and he says, regarding that time, he says, it was an age when things seemed out of control. And then he begins to quote from writers at the period that we're talking about here. So Virgil wrote, right and wrong are confounded. So many wars the world over, so many forms of wrong. When Tacitus came to write the history of this period, he wrote, I am entering upon the history of a period rich in disasters, gloomy with wars, rent with seditions, savage in its very hours of peace. Another writer, Suetonius, writing in the reign of Tiberius, said, no day passed but someone was executed. Another Roman historian, Livy, he said, Rome could neither bear its ills nor the remedy that might have cured them.
We'll return to Pastor Brian's message in just a moment. But first, we'd like to remind you to visit our website, backtobasicsradio.com. You can download a podcast of today's message or stream it for free. So take a moment and go to our website, and be sure to sign up for Pastor Brian's weekly devotional. Now, let's continue with today's message.
Another writer, Propertius, wrote, "I see Rome, proud Rome, perishing, the victim of her own prosperity." Barclay goes on and says, "It was an age of unparalleled luxury," quoting from Juvenal. He said, "A luxury more ruthless than wars broods over Rome. No guilt or deed of lust is wanting since Roman poverty disappeared." Seneca spoke of money, the ruin of the true honor of things, and said, "We ask not what a thing truly is, but what it cost." That sounds like something you hear in Newport Beach. Lucretia said, "Crime became the only antidote to boredom." And then finally, Barclay goes on and says, "It was an age of unparalleled immorality." Quoting from Seneca, "Women were married to be divorced and divorced to be married." Juvenal cites the case of a woman who had 8 husbands in 5 years. He also cites the incredible case of Agrippina, the empress herself, the wife of Claudius. We read about Claudius in the book of Acts, who at night used to leave the royal palace and go down to serve in a brothel for the sake of sheer lust. And then he goes on and he says, "And vice did not stop with the crude and natural vices. Society from top to bottom was riddled with unnatural vice. 14 out of the 15 Roman emperors were homosexual." So Paul's describing the world that he lived in. But you could go back in history and you could find that cycle repeated over and over again amongst various people. Of course, when you read the books of Moses, when you read especially Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, when you read the book of Joshua, you realize that that same kind of a thing had occurred in Canaanite culture. And so now here we are again, 2,000 years further along in history, and in at least in the West, but I think you can certainly extend it beyond the West, this is a very, very accurate picture that is being painted of where things are at today. So, in just taking this whole section now of Romans chapter 1, there are 3 things that I want to focus in on. The first being this. Paul, in the verses that we read, he gives us several reasons why men are under the wrath of God. Now, we've already talked extensively about the wrath of God. We've already pointed out how this, from the perspective of modern man especially, that the whole concept of God judging people or there being such a thing as the wrath of God is completely unacceptable in our culture today. And yet, the fact of the matter remains, God's wrath is presently being poured out. And so, let's go back and look at the reasons for God's wrath being poured out. And we've already talked about some of this, so we won't belabor the point. But remember, verse 18, God's wrath is poured out because men suppress the truth. They suppress the truth. They hold down what they know to be right in order to do what they know to be wrong. And he tells us that right there in verse 18. "For suppressing the truth, the wrath of God has come upon men." Secondly, "For ignoring God's revelation of himself given in nature." And we looked at that previously, verses 19 and 20. "Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and divine nature, so that men are without excuse." And so we talked extensively about that, but let me just touch on it again for a moment. Men ignore God's revelation. I didn't really bring this up previously, but I think it's right to mention it here. Not only does man, we talked about this, man has an innate sense of right and wrong, but man has an innate belief in a supreme being. People have to be taught atheism. Atheism isn't the natural position. As a matter of fact, when you listen to most atheists today, and especially the so-called new atheists, all of them have sort of a story about where they left off believing in God. So they all more or less admit that at one time they did believe in God. But there was some event or something that transpired or somebody influenced them that brought them to the point of rejecting God, dismissing God, and so they became atheists. So a man has to ignore that. He has to push that sense that's there naturally in him, that there is a God. He has to push that out. And then, of course, there is the issue of right and wrong. And as we've already seen, men ignore that voice of conscience, if we want to call it that, and suppress that and do the things, as we've already said, that they know to be wrong. And then, of course, we've looked at the whole issue of just creation itself. Nature itself is speaking to people about where there's a creation, there's a creator. Where there is a life, there must be someone who brought life into being. The idea that non-living things produce living things, there's no place anywhere ever that anybody has seen anything like that. It just doesn't happen. So, for ignoring God's revelation, verses 19 and 20, then in verse 21, we're told that men are under God's wrath because they refuse to give glory and thanks to God. Refusing to give glory and thanks to God because although they knew God. Now notice that, they knew God. And of course, if you go back to the beginning, men knew God originally. And then you can go to other points in history where men knew God, but I think he's probably referring to the general knowledge of God that comes through general revelation that we talked about before. They knew that there must be a God, because where there's a creation, there has to be a creator. Where there's a design, there has to be a designer. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God. Notice this, nor were thankful. They failed to glorify God. And to glorify God simply means to view him in the way that he ought to be viewed, or respond to him in the way that he ought to be responded to. How should we respond to God? We should respond to him in praise and worship and obedience. But they didn't do that. They failed to give glory to God, and they failed to be thankful. They failed to be thankful. And you know, we see this today being repeated all over again, don't we? We're living in a thankless generation. And we're seeing this regression. We're seeing this continual slide into this kind of a society that Paul is describing here, a society that's on the verge of destruction, disintegration. But all around us today, people have lost the ability to be thankful. And the irony is that we have more today, and especially in this nation, we have more today than any previous generation of human beings have ever experienced it, as far as material blessings and prosperity and all of those kinds of things. We've got more than anybody's ever had, and we've got a thankless generation. We've got a generation of entitlement. You know, people today just think, well, of course this is the way it is. You know, this is the way it ought to be. I deserve this, and I even deserve more. So we live in the midst of a thankless generation. But these are the very things that bring about God's wrath and his judgment. And then verses 22 and 23, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven because of man's perverting of the glory of God. They changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds, four-footed animals, and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up. So, perverting the glory of God. And of course, in the ancient world, probably a real obvious example you remember would be after God saved Israel out of Egypt, he brought them to Mount Sinai. Moses was there giving the commands. And you remember Aaron was coerced by the people to make us a God. We don't know what happened to Moses. He hasn't come back down the mountain. Make us a God that can lead us. And so what did they do? They made an image of a bull, a calf, the golden calf. And they took the glorious God and reduced him down to this four-footed beast, perverting the glory of God. There's still plenty of idolatrous cultures today around the world where people worship animals, where they worship insects. This is very much alive and well in the 21st century. We here in the West are a little more sophisticated than that. At least we think ourselves to be more sophisticated. And really, we have perverted the glory of God, and we have exchanged, as he goes on to say here in verse 25, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator. The creature we worship is man himself. We worship ourselves. We worship humanity. We worship our own intellect. We worship our own ideas. This is the idolatry of the West, man worshiping himself, deifying himself, worshiping other men, putting men's ideas and theories and philosophies above God. We have a radically idolatrous culture, even though we don't recognize it so often. You know, we might jokingly talk about American Idol, but there certainly are many idols in America, aren't there? You see the way people react to celebrities and things like that. It's nothing less than idolatry. My daughter works in the fashion industry, and she's in an environment where there's, you know, celebrities are kind of in and out where she's at. And she tells me, you know, about some of the people that she works with, how, you know, it's all about seeing a celebrity. It's all about getting close to them. It's all about pretending like you know them. It's all about, maybe some way, somehow I can, you know, be identified with this person. And, you know, of course, she's a Christian, so she just sort of looks at all this and thinks it's insane. But this is where we're at today, worshiping and serving the creature rather than the creator. So these are the reasons Paul gives us here for man being under the wrath of God. Secondly, the apostle tells us here in these verses the inner process that man passed through that led him to dismiss God.
Many of us pray with little heart. We mutter the usual prayer and leave with little expectation. But is this how Jesus taught us to pray? This month's resource for a donation of any amount is a book written by Manny Mill titled Radical Prayer, The Power of Being Bold and Persistent. In 2010, Manny's wife Barbara was in an automobile accident. This event caused him to ask, "How can I treat God like a paramedic, calling him out only when there's an emergency?" God used this as the impetus to begin to transform Manny's prayer life. When you pray consistently, persistently, and boldly for the hallowing of God's holy name, big things happen. Radical Prayer gives us a glimpse of the transformative and explosive power of praying in God's will, a power that takes place internally and manifests externally. Whether your prayer life is strong or in shambles, Radical Prayer will compel you to a life of bold, persistent, transformative, and expectant prayer. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this powerful resource written by a man who has personally experienced the power of radical prayer. For a donation of any size to Back to Basics, we'll send you a copy of Manny Mills' book titled Radical Prayer, The Power of Being Bold and Persistent. The details for obtaining this month's book and all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll return tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Romans. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.